C-168. Number 2B.
But the most impressive point was, in this 50th chapter, I don't know how she could do it in such short time when she had withdrawn from Boston. Every chapter had now more or less the layout of the final chapter. At that point, when you compare the 48th, because there was no 49th edition, she left it out because she wanted the new edition to have a real good number. She was very hot on good numbers. Just as she said to the publisher, my textbook finally must have 700 pages. And so she put in so much that it made 700 pages. She really wanted to bring out, also through the symbol of numbers, her idealism of the system. So for the first time, you see, she rearranged every chapter, the content of every chapter, so that it followed our layout of the 7x7, as we have it today. Naturally, some alteration, it's not yet absolutely 100% the same, but you can now recognize even the structure of the subtones. Can you see what she did? First of all, it took her 5 main revisions somehow to find out, so to say, what is the main structure of the textbook, of the chapter. What are the main subject of it? And the subtones were all upside down and in it. But with the 6th edition, she did really that scissor and paste job and cut up, so to say, the textbook into paragraphs and so on, and rearranged those paragraphs so that suddenly they had the order as we have them today. A terrific thing happened there. Can you see what she changed was structure, making order out of disorder. Can you see the terrific thing? That's what evolution does. Evolution is what? Bringing out of chaos order. That's evolution. And that is the idea that fascinates today all the scientists, the biological scientists, and fascinates the physicists, that somehow there is a law at work that can make out of chaos order. And so she underwent that very same trend in all her life, that in writing her big vision, she must have had a terrific insight as an unstructured wholeness at the beginning. And all her endeavors were now, how can I structure that wholeness? I think I said it again wrong. She didn't say, how can I structure that oneness? The oneness of being made her structure, her revelation. She was under orders. I guess she didn't know what she was really doing. But she had that spiritual sense that was pure enough to hear God speak in order and system. And little by little it came out. So now in the 6th main revision, she put the main tones and the subtones into proper order. And you can already then really recognize already quite nicely the final edition of Science and Health. And there it is when she said, then the divine, that would bring the divine concurrence of the Spirit and the Word. And that she said, the natural order of heaven comes now down to earth. She had a terrific sense that now order is breaking through. And it says, this is a book of spirit, no more of the letter. So that she would say, and that impressed me very much, because we always ask, how can we get the spirit of the letter? And she said here in that 50th edition when introducing it, and said, you can get it by order. If you see the letter in order, you get the spirit. Because then one fact is ordered with the next fact, that one fact is therefore related to the next fact in an ordered way and not in a disordered way, and that begins to move in you and brings out the spirit of it, the connection of it, and this is what she has done in that sixth main edition. It's a terrific step forward that she made at that point. And you can see something so nicely. When she was really in trouble, when she really went through deep waters, always something big comes out. Think of it in your own life. And something really troubles you. Don't be depressed. Rejoice in tribulation, Paul would say. Something big is coming out of it, because it's only a crisis, and a crisis is always God's opportunity. Always God's opportunity. So she gave that sixth chapter. But I'm going to show you something which is terrific. In that sixth revision? That sixth main revision. She gave what we have today, the sixth chapter, Science, Theology, and Medicine. What did it contain? Mostly. What stands out there as teaching, as no more sentences, those two translations. What are those two translations? At the first time she shows those two translations as the Christ translation. She wrote that chapter, Science, Theology, and Medicine, which today we know is the Christ as the Christ in the structure of the textbook. So it had the tone of the Christ as Christ did. That Christ as Christ, what was new in that chapter? The Christ translation. Can you hear Christ? Then she was showing something else. Namely, she took the platform which only had 19 points and added the rest of it to make it complete. What was missing in that platform? All those statements on the Christ. It is as if up to that point she didn't have see the importance of the Christ. And she added all those 8 statements on the Christ. What did she do at that period? She brought out Christ and Christmas. Yes? What did she further do? She organized the church again, but no more on Jesus as the first organization. But she said, I'm organizing on the rock Christ. Everything was Christ. Suddenly with that sixth subject, she brought in the Christ idea. And that's interesting. As late as that. And we'll see what it implied even further. It implied that when she was giving a definition of God in recapitulation, she suddenly began to speak about the divine principle. Before she didn't have divine as a quality to principle. Before she had divine principle, but capitalized divine as a proper noun. She just called God the divine principle as a proper noun, divine. But now she took it as a quality into the definition. You know, into the definition of that God is divine and incorporeal and supreme. So she added divine, again, which we know is the tone of the Christ. Everything that seems to happen at that time was just somehow dictated by the Christ. What happened in her life from there on. It was as if she would say at that point that I put my whole burden I was carrying with that organization and with those students and with the teaching and with the preaching and with writing and with lecturing, I put that whole burden from off my shoulder and put it on the Christ's shoulder. How could she do it? Not by putting it on the shoulder of another person, but put it now on the shoulder, really, of everybody, meaning that everybody has a Christ and therefore can take care of the idea. And that is the period then after 1891 where she put all her burden on something. Namely, it was that time when she put the burden, so to say, of teaching on the Board of Education, where she puts it, the lecturing on the Board of Lectureship, and the writing, she put up the publishing society and said, you look after it, you look after the publishing of my books, the Sentinel. All that which she had to do with the public, she put on the Committee on Publication. Can you see all the activities which were on her shoulder and where she had to use the Christ idea to take care of it? She took it and put it right away from her shoulder into the lap of the whole movement, so to say, and say, here you have the Board of Lectureship, the Board of Education, your Publishing Society, and so on, the Committee on Publication. They have a Christ too. She began to feel that she must really put the, or see that every one of her students had his own Christ and can use it, instead that she alone would be at the helm of the boat and say, I can steer the whole idea. So that was that terrific period of getting rid, so to say, of her own responsibility and saying, I'm the only representative of the Christ idea, and that is not true. That's why I say so often to students or so that come along and say, well, how can I do it? Tell me what to do it. I say, don't you have your own Christ? You think I alone have it? To shake them up to the point where they see they have their own Christ. They can go right to the Christ. And I will show you why that is so important, if I have time to show you that still in this hour. So it is here that she said, now my successor is not my adopted son, but a generic man. It was also the time where we had the World's Parliament of Religion in 1893, where she could see, I put that whole idea out into the world, instead of concentrating everything to a centralized organization. We should be part of the world, and was trying to go out into the world. There, she organized, therefore, the Mother Church as something that is universal. That was in her definition, that she put now the Bible and science and health in place of a pastor and said, people are not good as a Christ, but the Bible and the textbook should be the Christ. Why should I constantly preach and teach? The Bible can teach, the textbook can teach and preach. And so we have this whole sense of truth that she said, let the volume of the Bible and the volume of the textbook be the volume of truth. Let that be the Christ idea. It's actually Christian science, so let everybody take part in it and act in unison with the Christ. But then came 1902, when she changed again something structurally very much. Namely, in 1902, with the 226th edition, which was then the seventh main edition or revision, she gave to the chapters the final order. The chapter themselves in the textbook, not the text in the chapter that she has done in the sixth revision, but in the seventh revision, she arranged the order of the chapter into that order as we have it today. So at that point, what did we have? At that point, we already had that now the textbook as one systematic book has a 4x4 structure through 16 chapters. every chapter had its own structure within the chapter. We could see that the fundamentals of the system were laid out in the platform with 32 points, then a recapitulation with all the 24 question and answers, then the key to the scripture with the 7 and the 4. So actually fundamentally the structure was laid out there, and the changes that came afterwards were important, but they did not so much touch actually the structure of the textbook. So here we feel that now we come to the climax of structure recognition, which she found. Also at that point she decapitalized those ideas which she before had capitalized in the definition, namely like creator and wisdom, intelligence and substance. They disappear really from the definition of God. And then we have an interesting development then coming in 1907. There, in 1907, and that was in the second edition of that year, because the editions were no more counted at that time. So early, I can say, in 1907, she put in that important sentence in recapitulation, that principle and idea is one. Golly, she comes back to her starting point. Her starting point was the infinite one, the oneness of being, which she could not explain through a structure. And little by little had to explain the structure and structure until finally she showed the structure, and then she said at the end of her life, and this structure is the infinite one. Principle and idea is one. And brought in this way again the idea back to its principle. Back to its principle. Then, in that same year, but a little bit later, she changed something else there, which is now really putting the dots on the I, can you say that? Which said, where she changed the definition of God. She changed that definition of God to the order of the world order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And therefore, at that very point in 1907, towards the end of her life, for the first time the definition of God was coinciding with the themes, with the subject in which the order of each chapter runs. Namely that, say, if you take prayer, it is built up in the word order and not in another order. So it coincided with the definition of God, so that one could see that what she was teaching in each chapter was actually just one example, so to say, of the fundamental word order, the definition of God. That what she was teaching in the second chapter was the word order, another example of the fundamentally the same order, the word order, and so on. So that now everything seemed to fall into place in a perfect way. Then, a little bit later in the same year, namely on June 10th, 1907, and she writes June 10th, 1907, she says, I read the textbook through consecutively for the first time in order to elucidate my idealism. Can you see? After she had made those last two changes, the oneness of being, principle of the idea is one, and this one, she said, is God. This one, not those two, is God. This one is God. Can you remember why she tried to explain that oneness in the first edition? If we are mind, when we are spirit, when we are life. Can you see that she felt that thing of principle and idea being one, and this one God, and not God and man? That now she found the scientific answer for that, can I say, mystical approach to God. And that now a scientific answer for the very same thing that she felt, but now she has explained it through science. And so she said, that at that point, I really began to see now that I have stated my idealism. And in this way, she brought in something else. It nearly knocked me over when I saw it. Nearly knocked me over. What is the definition of God? The definition of God is what? God is, not mind. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, and then the word order of the synonyms. But we have seen already in the sixth main edition that there, for the first time, she introduced into the definition divine. Up to that point, she only had incorporeal and supreme. Now, what does that mean? She introduced with the six, she introduced divine. If you take those four adjectives, John Dolly has always brought out that incorporeal and supreme are the relative attitudes, that divine and infinite are the absolute attitudes. You can see that. Incorporeal is just saying it is not corporeal, therefore it's a very relative standpoint. Supreme is, you only have something supreme if it's over something else, therefore it's relative. But divine is from God itself. Straight from the horse's mouth, you get it from God, huh? The Christ. So with the six, she introduced divine, just as she did all other, as she introduced the Christ, you know, into the platform, that introduced it as Christ and Christmas, as the two translations, as a new chapter, Christ as a Christ. And now in 1907, she introduced infinite for the first time and gave the last touch to that definition of God. But, you know, when you introduce infinite, you don't introduce finiteness, which means, what does it mean? I tell you what it means. It nearly knocked me over. It means that there is no more a law of cause and effect, because a law of cause and effect has a beginning and an end. It's not infinite. It's not infinite. But if you have infinite, it means that you have a cybernetic law. A cybernetic law that always has a feedback right to the beginning. That is like a circle, or much more like a spiral. And no more cause and effect. At that point, she would show that actually, for a long time, she couldn't see the most important thing, or not present it. She had it naturally in her fingertips. That's no question whatever. But she couldn't present the two main thing for a Christian scientist, which is the Christ and science, namely Christian science, namely the divine and the infinite. What was missing? You know, we were talking about it last week, over and over and over. But you have not, most of you have not, or some of you have not been in last week. There we found it. That the student of Christian science thinks deductively in cause and effect. So he has a word, God, and its effect is the outcome of God, namely man and the universe. That's his creation. But what is missing is the Christ. We were always thinking from the word to Christianity, leaving out the Christ, just as she has done up to the sixth main edition. And only with the sixth main edition she said, golly, there is something missing. Namely, the most important thing that we cannot deduce from the word to Christianity, from cause to effect. This does not belong to Christian science reasoning. That's not Christian science reasoning. Christian science reasoning goes out from the word and then lets the Christ operate what he wants to do. And we are not going to tell what should be the outcome. And only if we let the Christ operate what he began to feel out with the six main editions, we really have a true Christianity. But if we leave it at that point, we have an end, something that has an end. And therefore she had to add something more to it and said, this has not an end. This is just the Christianity, is just the outcome which gives us a feedback to the cause back, and therefore makes it infinite, it makes it a spiraling up. It gives us something very different in the way of what we think is infinite. You know, up to that point, we may have been thinking of infinite, that we said, well, infinite means infinite in variation, that the law of cause and effect is applicable infinitely. Always you can have it in every situation, you have the law of cause and effect in another way, infinitely. That's not the real sense of infinite which we should have. We should have that other sense of infinite, not infinite in time and space, not infinite in variation of the same elements, not infinite in repetition. Infinite in what? Infinite in spiraling up the evolution, so that the end is always the beginning again. Therefore, infinite in bringing in more complexity, in bringing in more order. That's infinite. Bringing order out of chaos, that's now infinite. And not that limited law of starting somewhere with a cause and then ending somewhere with Christianity and say, this is the law of cause and effect. You see that? That's terrific, because it overthrows our whole consciousness, that consciousness which was very proud of being able to think in the law of cause and effect, not even seeing that this is not really the law of the science of being, that is a law that you can apply in healing and so on. A disease has somewhere a cause and sickness is the effect. But in the science of being, you have a definition of God and not the definition of a sickness or a sick man. You have the definition of the infinite one that has no beginning, no end, and you only can have it properly if we start out with the word and let that word work for us. And we are not going to define to that word what it has to work out. So that Christianity is the outcome of Christ and not of what we want to demonstrate. And that outcome is only another link to show through a feedback loop that we have found a higher outcome, therefore a higher input. And so the cybernetic law goes on working and working. That's what this Mrs. Eddy is discovering. Yes?